From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief for July 7th. Riley here, July 7th. The news in 10. Let's start at home. Let's get into it. First, from Professorially, the devil we got used to, normalcy bias, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and the art of the fake redemption arc. Every one of us wakes up most mornings expecting the day to behave itself, like a dog that has never once bitten anyone and therefore we assume never will. That expectation has a name. If you are the kind of person who orders a filet-o-fish every single Friday like it is a religious sacrament, normalcy bias is what makes you assume McDonald's will have fish on a random Friday afternoon. And when some regional supply chain hiccup leaves you standing at the counter being told they out, you will feel a rage completely disproportionate to the price of the sandwich. Psychologists call it normalcy bias, and it is the quiet, stupid, completely unearned assumption that whatever happened yesterday is probably going to happen again today. Normalcy bias does not require your life to be good. It only requires your life to be boring in a way ye can predict. That is not about the fish. That is about the universe breaking a promise it never actually made you. Here is the part people miss. Normalcy does not mean good. It just means normal. A person can be in a genuinely miserable situation and still develop a normalcy bias around the misery, because even suffering has a rhythm you can set your watch to. The same way you can get used to a smoke detector chirping every night at 3 a.m. and eventually just sleep through the apocalypse. Say you are in your 20s, dating someone you argue with so constantly that neither of you actually likes the other anymore. But the arguing has become the metronome of the relationship, the background hum of the whole operation. You expect to fight. You expect to make up. You expect Tuesday to look like every other miserable Tuesday. Then one day, seemingly out of nowhere, she dumps you. It was not out of nowhere. There were 100 signs, all of them screaming, all of them ignored, because the daily dysfunction had become so routine that the actual ending felt like getting hit by a bus you swore only existed in other people's neighborhoods. Psychologists call that specific gut punch an expectancy violation, the moment reality snaps a pattern you had unconsciously bet your whole nervous system on continuing. For a lot of people, that snap is genuinely traumatic, whether what came before was good, bad, or just a low simmering disaster you had learned to call home. Politics runs on this exact mechanism, except it runs on it constantly, at national scale, with worse hair and significantly more lying. A country settles into a normal. Something detonates that normal. The country picks through the rubble and calls the wreckage a new normal. Then something detonates that one too. Rinse, repeat, forever, like a horror movie franchise that keeps getting sequels nobody asked for because the first one made money. It is not a bug in how democracies process shocks, it is closer to the operating system. The real question is not whether the cycle keeps spinning, because it absolutely will. It is what quietly gets shoved into the category of fine, whatever every time the wheel turns, and whether anybody has the stomach to admit what just got swallowed. And here is the sneaky part. The cycle never announces itself while it is happening. Nobody gets a push notification saying, "Hey, the baseline just moved. Please adjust your outrage settings accordingly." The new normal just kind of oozes in overnight, like mold, and within a year or two the thing that would have ended a career under the old normal barely rates a shrug and a scroll past in the new one. That is how genuinely deranged behavior gets laundered into background noise, and it works best precisely when nobody bothers to point at it and go, "Hey, wait a second." From 1789 to 2016, the American presidency operated inside guardrails that both parties, whatever else they were lying about, mostly agreed to respect. Plenty of corruption in there. Plenty of cruelty, incompetence, scandal, the occasional flash of real heroism, the whole ugly buffet of human government. But underneath all of it sat one non-negotiable rule. You run, you win or you lose, and if you lose, you accept it like an adult and get out of the building. Then, on June 16, 2015, Donald Trump rode down a golden escalator like a Bond villain who forgot to buy a volcano lair, announced he was running for president, and the rules that had held for 226 years started disintegrating in real time, because it turns out normalcy bias does not check your IQ, your resume, or how many books you have written before it grabs you by the throat. 44 transitions of power happened this way, through wars, depressions, and assassinations, and the losing side always eventually took the L and went home. Mark Lamont Hill, a genuinely sharp cultural commentator, went on The Breakfast Club in August of 2016 and told Charlamagne, DJ Envy, and Angela Yee, "I'm not scared of Trump." Next, second, from the left hook, why Michigan is the epicenter of the Democratic Party's future. News broke of Graham Platner's sexual assault allegation during my live chat with progressive commentator and organizer Jess Craven. We discussed it while talking about a bigger conversation happening within American politics, which is the rising bipartisan rage against the brawligarchy and what is deemed the establishment. Spoiler alert, Jess and I believe Platner should resign in light of this credible accusation. Mainers decided to back him despite his troubling history because they wanted a political outsider who reflected their positions. Janet Mills, the establishment candidate, refused to adapt or evolve. Still, the Democratic Party and its donors doubled down on her and were opposed to Platner even before the scandals. Why? He represents their waning influence and power over the party. Melet Kairos just won by double digits in Colorado as a Democratic socialist who is against ICE, forever wars, the brawligarchy, and Israel's genocide. Mamdani is an extremely popular mayor of New York City who is getting things done by flexing his power. His three picks in New York all swept, including Darialis Chevalier, who overcame a nasty and racist smear campaign days before the elections. Maybe you can dismiss these wins as aberrations. After all, New York is a cesspool of godless, gay, Muslim, atheist, Marxist vegans. But what about Michigan? You know, the Rust Belt, the swing state, the heartland. That's what Abdel El-Sayed is doing right now. He's up against Haley Stevens, who is APAC-groomed candidate. Mallory McMorrow just suspended her campaign over the weekend. Despite the polls having El-Sayed beating Republican Mike Rogers, the Democratic establishment and its acolytes still say he is unelectable. The Michigan race reflects the divide within the Democratic Party and will reveal if the establishment has finally lost its reach and control. It'll only be about $3.75/month or $38/year. There are no paywalls, and the left hook continues depending on the kindness of our readers. Thank you, and many others for tuning into my live video with. Join me for my next live video in the app. Up next, third, from latent.space. AI News, the Field Guide to Fable. Farrakh had been working on a Field Guide to Fable blog series, and happened to have a keynote planned the day of the relaunch, so he kindly pivoted the entire keynote in one night to give the most timely advice he had, which was released today. The four segments are my watch-along commentary in Italy, CS000 introduction and setting the stage for Fable 232 on Hobbling Claude. Understanding model behavior. The constraints on a model are often imposed by us, the harness we put them in, and the way we prompt them. While we congratulate friend of the show, General Intuition on their new model and friend of the show, Shunyi Yao on their new model, and the world awaits the release of GPT 5.6 Sol Ultra, people are racing to find the limits of Fable 5 before the subscription subsidy ends tomorrow. Case in point, most people have come to agree with Farrakh on the unreasonable effectiveness of HTML. 908 Finding your unknowns. Navigating the gap between map and territory, a close cousin to unhobbling. If unhobbling is about clearing out outdated knowns, then this is about finding things you didn't even know you didn't know. Easiest techniques. Telling Claude to do a blind spot pass for your unknowns. Brainstorm for wildly different design directions. Interview me similar to / grill me, but prioritizing high impact questions. Use references. In the case of migrations, keep implementation notes.md, a running log of underspecified decisions made on your behalf. Quiz me, ensure my understanding. 1429 Dealing with grief. Reflecting on the emotional shift in coding productivity. What you used to spend weeks on is now done in hours. 1630 Being unreasonable. Demanding good, fast, and cheap. Results trade-offs are not real because Fable is more capable. You can be more ambitious and not accept trade-offs. Therefore, when we encounter a new class of model, we should expect to remove or change those harnesses and prompts in order to elicit new behaviors that you otherwise would never see because you were overly limiting aka hobbling the model. Building is easy, generating value is still hard. Overall, an excellent talk that we will be mapping out the implications of as the world acclimatizes to the first Fable class models. AI News for 7/04/2026/7/06/2026. We checked 12 subreddits, 544 Twitters, and no further Discords. Tencent Hunyuan's High 3 release and the openweight Frontier High 3 lands as a serious open model. Tencent released High 3 under Apache 2.0, a 295 billion MOE with 21 billion active parameters, 192 experts/top 8 routing, GQA, 256,000 context, and a 3.8 billion MTP layer for speculative decoding. AI News website lets you search all past issues. As a reminder, AI News is now a section of Latent Space. You can opt in / out of email frequencies. Multiple posts framed it as competitive with much larger systems on reasoning, coding, and agentic tasks, with particular emphasis on reliability improvements like tool call instability and anti-hallucination work at Alibicuch, at Hugging Papers, at Shenyu Yao 12. If follow-up detailed Tencent production kernels now upstreamed into VLLM main, including load balanced decode scheduling and fused FB8 MoE serving, with reported gains of up to 2.95x on mixed-length decode and latency reductions of roughly 24% TTFT and 17% TPOT versus DFault backends at VLLM project. Inference support was unusually day zero mature. At VLLM project said Hi3 runs natively in VLLM from launch with tool call and reasoning parsers, MTP speculative decoding, and validated support on NVIDIA and AMD. Broader open model context, Hi3 was immediately compared against GLM 5.2, with some posters arguing Tencent has now joined the very top tier of open source labs if the benchmark and vibe test results hold at DeorDax's techs, while others still maintain GLM 5.2 as the best currently usable open weight model in practice at Tinigrad at MBusigen. Community reaction was strong enough that at Technium quickly made Hi3 free on news portal for 2 weeks. The net takeaway, the open frontier is compressing fast, and the competition is increasingly about deployment robustness rather than just raw leaderboard deltas. Agent benchmarks, harnesses, and long-running memory automation bench AA adds a more realistic agent eval. At Artificial Analyze launched an independent leaderboard for Zapier's automation bench, evaluating agents across 657 tasks and 40 simulated SaaS apps with both objectives and guardrails. Claude Fable 5 led at 48.6%, narrowly ahead of Opus 4.8 at 48.5%, with Gemini 3.5 Flash at 42.6% and GPT 5.5x High at 42.1%. More interesting than the ranking, every model still breaks business rules, and Gemini looked notably strong on objective per guardrail violation and cost efficiency. And then, fourth, from the business engineer, the six AGA's moats. Every business model transition redefines what defensibility means. SaaS had its own moat, vocabulary seat lock-in, network effects, switching costs on stored data, ecosystem depth. Those moats worked because SaaS sold access to tools that humans operate, and defensibility grew around human usage patterns. AGA's breaks that vocabulary because AGA's sells something structurally different. AGA's agentic as a service charges for the execution of outcomes by agents, not for access to tools operated by humans. That single reframing is the disruption. It rewires what gets sold outcomes, not access, who does the buying business budgets, not IT budgets, where margin lives substrate, not interface, and which metrics still predict the future consumption, not seats. Every SaaS moat was built for a world where the seat was the atomic billing unit. In AGA's, the seat is gone. The agent is the atomic unit, and the moats have to be rebuilt from scratch around it. Three sequential inversions define the transition, and understanding them is prerequisite to understanding what defensibility looks like inside the shift. The operator inversion. The agent, not the human, operates the workflow. The billing unit stops tracking headcount and starts tracking agent activity. Most enterprise software companies have completed this inversion architecturally by mid-2026, even if they have not repriced. The buyer inversion. The person authorizing the purchase is the executive who owns the outcome, the CRO, the COO, the general counsel, not the IT function that owns the tool stack. Procurement, budget line items, and the sales motion all rearrange. Most vendors are still mid-flight on this one. The margin inversion. Gross margin structure shifts from software plus support high fixed margin, low variable cost to consumption minus inference variable margin dominated by token cost. The P&L reshapes. This inversion is deferred at most incumbents through mechanisms like internal absorption, customer zero, buybacks, and reclassification, but it becomes visible once consumption revenue scales past a threshold. From SaaS to AGA's, the full cascade March 2026 mapped the underlying value layer inversion value migrating from the interface layer, where SaaS captured it, down to the substrate layer, where AGA's captures it, and the five-layer cascade this inversion produces across the enterprise software stack. The AGA's transition is what these three inversions look like when they run through the enterprise software category. It has a canonical form, and its canonical form has been mapped in the prior work of this analytical arc. Follow me on the AI supercycle as well. It also established the three canonical AGA's pricing models, outcome-based, consumption-based, and hybrid. The four frictions of AGA's April 2026 mapped the frictions that slow the transition: financial, operational, competitive, commercial, and why they multiply rather than add. The Tell, Salesforce Q1 FY27 May 2026 used the largest pure enterprise software incumbent as an instrument to locate where the transition actually sits. The verdict, architecturally migrating, mechanically still SaaS, operator inverted, buyer not, margin deferred. The four intelligence moats June 2026 The direct parent to this piece mapped how the entire AI stack builds defensibility across paradigms, corpus, verifier, harness, container. That piece established the machine side moat map. This piece completes the arc by mapping defensibility inside the transition itself. If old SaaS moats no longer apply and machine side moats alone are not sufficient, what moats does an AGA-esque company actually build? The answer is 6-3 inherited from the machine side verifier, harness, container, 3 new to the buyer relationship trust, integration, feedback. Together they define what AGA-esque defensibility looks like once the transition matures. They also determine, mechanically, which of the three AGA-esque pricing models a company can actually charge. A link the closing section of this piece will make explicit. The order in which the six moats are built matters more than the number of them. They are not parallel, they are serial. Each one unlocks the next. A company that tries to build them out of order finds itself with moats that do not compound and, more consequentially, with pricing power that stalls at whichever inversion its missing moat was gating. Next, fifth, from Anarchonomicon. Introducing Misery Marches. This summer I will be leading the first Misery March in the Greater Toronto / Ontario area TBA. Join the Anarchonomicon Discord server. Toronto, for those of you who have never been, is one of the most gorgeous, walkable, safe, pleasant, dense urban cities in the world and North America in particular. The Old City of Toronto, or Old Toronto, is an amazing old Victorian grid city comprised of almost 100 villages, town, and neighborhoods that all slowly merged together but all kept their individual quirks. One is even technically an independent republic of 200 people, that the federal government accidentally recognized its independence when their meme protest became a feel-good story 50 years ago. They still pay taxes. The whole old city is 16 miles wide and is sort of a blend of New York and London, but without the knife, gun, or youth crime, and many lovely hiking trails that wind throughout the city's 100-plus mile ravine network. Pleasant summer hikes and walks and groups to walk abound. You can find gorgeous trails and people to hike those trails or city tours anywhere, and Margaret and her friends aren't forming a cohesive high-trust super fit unit off of it. And into the nightmare of the unwalkable, concrete megacity hellscape sprawl beyond Etobicoke, Scarborough, and the 401, where they shove the airports and the industry and the housing projects for all the recent immigrants, where the street signs themselves have been known to stop using the Latin alphabet. Instead, we're going to take subways, streetcars, and buses populated by the strangest, smelliest Star Wars cantina creatures. Away from that, we're going outside Old Toronto, outside Metro Toronto, outside the leafy, lovely expanses of endless walkability, the deadlands beyond Willowdale that Rush described in The Necromancer. In high summer, in Ontario humidity, on concrete heat islands that will cook an egg, and we're going to walk 30 km, 20 miles, 6-9 hours in that scorching concrete hell where legend tells of second-generation old Indian men who have never seen a white face. Drive 1 hour outside Vancouver or Montreal, and you're in the mountains. Drive 1 hour outside Toronto. We're going into the heart of darkness, at the worst, most miserable time of year to do so, into lands often described as Mumbai or New Delphi or bigger, hotter Syria, where all the worst trends of suburbanism, mass migration, urbanism, boomerism, sprawl, and post-war mistakes all intersect. Tee into Barad-dûr-like eyes of pure blighted suburban madness, such as Square One or Brampton Shoppers World or Woodbine Mall and Fantasy Fair or Vaughan Mills or First Markham Place or the University of Toronto Scarborough or the Pickering Casino Resort. There's actually a non-zero chance one of us could die or be driven to madness of heat stroke, violence, mistrusting a corner store, the parasitic macromillipedes, or other complications. 20 miles in the midday sun, and you're in Toronto. Rain or shine, back to civilization and the leafy green bubble of inner Toronto the hard way. But why? The rules of a misery march are simple. You and your comrades use Google Maps to scout out and hunt down the most miserable, blighted, sprawled out, industrial parked, almost unreachable segment of your metro area, the part no one you have ever met has ever been. Then using public transit, skateboards, Uber, taxi, your mom, etc., to get there. Then you walk back 10-20 miles to the city core or whatever you consider civilization across 6-9 hours. Depending on the metro area and local laws, you may want to be armed. But for Toronto purposes, this is unnecessary. Toronto's lost shades and Silent Hill-esque monsters are nothing if not cowardly. If anyone has to tap out partway for heatstroke, blisters, or for fear that the sadness will consume them or their wife nags them to get home after a few hours, we don't hold it against them. They did the important thing. Up next, 6, from Michael Berk. AI, a postmortem on the Blip 2.0 at Anthropic, AIRDZ#1140. It's now officially 3 weeks since the lifting of Anthropic's June 12 Blip 2.0 last week by the US government. Named as such by me after the Blip 1.0 3 years ago, when OpenAI's nonprofit board fired and rehired founder/CEO Sam Altman over a globally stressful weekend, both times an interruption in the AI tech wave that was startlingly searing, with lots of unintended consequences still being felt today from the Blip 1.0. And as I discussed last week, this second one is not yet completely behind us, especially with the US government still gating both Anthropic and OpenAI on its latest next generations of frontier AI models. So it's helpful to see what the latest postmortem analysis on how it all went down reveals. AxiOS goes through it all and how the world's top AI models were revived. The fight that scrubbed the world's most powerful AI models from the internet featured personality clashes, industry confusion, and international backlash. Why it matters, Anthropic's models are back online, but the impact of its 20-day showdown with the Trump administration will be long-lasting. Behind the scenes, it began when Amazon, Anthropic's partner and investor, sounded an alarm that was later disputed by cybersecurity experts. It warned about a jailbreaking issue it found with the AI lab's latest models, Mythos and Fable, meaning a technical flaw that could have caused a failure of their guardrails. Amazon flagged its concerns to the administration, triggering sweeping export controls. A U.S. official said the government conducted its own tests once it became apparent that the issue needed to be addressed. Cybersecurity experts, however, later wrote in an open letter to the administration that other leading AI models have the same issue Amazon warned about with Anthropic. Then the Friday evening events that set it all off with a call from Lutnick. On June 12, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, at the direction of President Trump, called Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei. Lutnick made clear to Amodei the issue needed to be resolved fast and alerted the CEO that THE company would be receiving a letter imposing sweeping export controls, the U.S. official said. Amodei called Lutnick back that night after receiving the letter, realizing it effectively meant the models would have to be taken offline, to which Lutnick responded that was indeed the goal. So claw, ready at last at that point on the near-term objective. According to a U.S. official, the company wanted to prove everything was already resolved and further changes were being fine-tuned. But the Federal Center for AI Standards and Innovation and the National Security Agency said those changes weren't good enough, prompting further fixes, according to the U.S. official. Gradually, various agency heads approved of the changes, and on July 1 the models were released, the official said. Gears of the government hard at work, indeed. Out of all of the administration officials Amazon's Andy Jassy could have called, it was Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent who first heard about the jailbreaking issue found in the company report, according to a separate source familiar. Bessent was early to sound the alarm on Mythos, work with White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles to re-engage the embattled company and help get a cybersecurity executive order across the finish line. While technical discussions to address the jailbreaking issue took place in D.C., it was Bessent who stood next to Trump during the G7, where allies called for our global cooperation on safety standards. Nature abhors a vacuum, as they say, specifically Mythos from Anthropic and GPT 5.6 from OpenAI. Regardless of broader consequences for the U.S. AI race vs. China, that decision led to a 3-week, multi-agency crash course in AI safety. Anthropic deployed engineers to Washington, D.C. At the center of the showdown was Lutnick, who also flanked Trump at the G7 meeting while his department's teams led technical discussions. National Cyber Director Sean Carecross, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, Treasury Department Chief Information Officer Sam Korkos, and the NSA also all participated in technical discussions. According to various sources, Washington mobilized faster to hold scores of meetings and pulled in far more agencies than one would expect for a single technical issue, one source said. Then it all gilt from there, continuing over to the G7 meeting in Europe, with Anthropic founder/CEO Dario Amodei in attendance. And the departure of AI and crypto czar David Sachs in recent days left Secretary Lutnick at the AI helm, steering the U.S. ship, and meeting briefly with President Trump. The tension spiraled amid personality clashes and poor communication. Anthropic eventually understood that in order to be successful, it needed to be on the same side as the government, the U.S. And then, 7th, from Destructed, All tameable ex-creature locations in ARK Survival Ascended Genesis 1. The launch of the Genesis 1 update in ARK Survival Ascended has added a fair number of ex-creatures in different parts of the map, and you can also tame some of them. To do so, you'll need to find them in their habitats. Ex-creatures are special variants that do more damage and also grant you more EXP. However, the real magic lies in taming them to add to your roster. Let's find out more about where you can find all the tameable ex-creatures on the Genesis 1 map. Disclaimer, work in progress. Before I deep dive into the locations, it's important to note that these creatures don't have fixed locations. I have marked their hotspots and the images to make it easier for you to find. You'll typically find them at the volcano biome, but they can be found in other areas of the map as well. Preferable coordinates, lat 41-45, long 73-78. You can find them in the snow biome. Preferable coordinates, lat 80-82, long 8-9. You can find this predator near the volcano biome. Preferable coordinates, lat 31, long 88-91. You can find it in the snowy biome near the water bodies. If one doesn't spawn, you'll need to kill some salmons to lure an otter. Preferable coordinates, lat 72-74, long 13-15. You'll usually find them in the bog biome. Preferable coordinates, lat 55, long 59-60. You can find the parasaur in the southern parts of the bog. Preferable coordinates, lat 93, long 74. The X-Raptor can be found towards the middle area near the bog biome. This is one creature that I didn't find a preferred coordinate for. Just look for in the marked area, but you can also find them sometimes near the water. You can find this creature towards the northern reaches of the volcano biome. Preferred coordinates, lat 5, long 79. There are certain spots in the volcano biome where you'll find caves with purple crystals. This is typically where you'll find the X-Rock Elemental. Preferable coordinates, lat 20-21, long 91. I found the Tape Jara near the same spot as the X-Barosaurathium. Preferable coordinates, lat 55, long 59-60. You can find this creature in the snow biome. Preferred coordinates, lat 80, long 17. You can find the X-Triceratops towards the middle of the volcano biome. Preferred coordinates, lat 32, long 80. You'll usually find the Spino all around the bog. Preferred coordinates, lat 59, long 70. I will be adding the list of all X creatures that can be tamed and found in the ocean biome. All the remaining details have been added on this guide. The post All Tameable X Creature Locations in ARK Survival Ascended Genesis 1 appeared first on Destructoid. Next, 8th, from Nintendo Life, Pokémon Go developer Niantic changes its name and logo. Niantic, the studio behind Pokémon Go, is getting a fresh look. After the $3.5 billion acquisition by Savvy Games Group's Scopely last spring, the company will now operate under the name Scopely Explore. The rebrand includes a new logo that leans into the broader adventure theme the parent company wants to push. The shift signals that the team behind the popular augmented reality game is being folded more tightly into Scopely's portfolio. While the core of the Pokémon Go experience isn't expected to change overnight, the branding move hints at a longer-term strategy to expand beyond just one title. Fans who have followed Niantic's evolution from a Google spin-off to a global AR powerhouse will notice the name change on future updates and press releases. The new visual identity is already rolling out across the company's website and developer portals. In short, the developer you know from catching creatures in your neighborhood will now be called Scopely Explore, and the logo will reflect that broader, exploratory vibe. It's a subtle but clear step toward integrating the studio into Scopely's larger gaming ecosystem. Up next, 9th, from Push Square, gigantic Xbox layoffs see the Outer Worlds dev Obsidian lose 25% of workforce. RPG studio impacted. Obsidian Entertainment, the Xbox first-party studio behind The Outer Worlds, Avowed, and Grounded, has reportedly lost around 25% of its staff as Microsoft cuts thousands of jobs across its gaming brand. These Obsidian-specific layoffs were not mentioned earlier in the day when the bad news first broke. Instead, they are being outed by Kotaku, who say that between 60 and 70 employees have lost their jobs. read the full article on pushsquare.com. And then, 10th, from Bisno National, adaptability key as UK stadium development enters new era. Manchester United's proposed £2 billion plus Old Trafford regeneration. Birmingham City's planned sports quarter. Everton's newly opened waterfront stadium. AEG's proposed Edinburgh Arena. Tottenham Hotspur's acclaimed multi-use stadium. All are eye-catching stadium and arena projects. And all are examples of how developers, sports clubs, and entertainment giants are increasingly treating venues as the centerpiece of mixed-use districts. Modern stadiums are now designed to generate income 365 days a year through hospitality, entertainment, offices, hotels, retail, residential development, and public realm, creating long-term real estate value. But without adaptability, stadiums will not meet longer-term needs. Attendees at Bisno's first European Sports and Entertainment Conference at Fulham Pier heard, "That's the day."